Welcome to the National Federation of the Blind's 2025 Senior Retreat, a time for empowerment, connection and growth. A special thanks to Janie Degenshain, Zoom administrator, and her team for a seamless retreat. Your dedication makes this event possible. Thank you for joining us on this journey.
Welcome, everybody, for our first full day of learning and fun, and we hope lots of other things. You may have read your email this morning telling you that there will be one person per day who wins a door prize, and then that person is not eligible to win again. So if your number is drawn a second time, we'll just say, aren't you sad? And then we'll move on to another number. And you voted for that. So there. Okay. And now I'm going to turn it over to Duncan Larson.
Thank you, Judy. Welcome, everybody. This is our first session, and it is on orientation and mobility. And while we were dealing while we were dealing with all the technology, I was feeling grateful isn't going to be anything about technology. It's going to be plain old low-tech orientation, mobility, and cane travel. And with me today is Charles Bennett. He is an orientation and mobility instructor at the Colorado Center for the Blind. He's a certified O&M instructor and also works with employment at the Colorado Center for the Blind. So it's my real pleasure to introduce Charles to talk to us about some basic things regarding cane travel.
Awesome. Thank you, Duncan. Hey, everyone. So happy to be here. Duncan mentioned, my name is Charles Bennett. I am a National Orientation and Mobility Certified Instructor. I've been teaching cane travel for about 6 years, and this last about a year and a half, I've been focusing more on employment. So it's been really great, but I still get an opportunity to teach travel as I'm getting our students out, doing some visits at some, doing some internships and things like that. We're always teaching some travel in some form or fashion. So today I was asked to come and present to you just so you know the basics of what pretty much, what we're going to talk about today are, what is a white cane? Why have a white cane? Some just travel basics. And we're just going to kind of get into it and just have some fun with this thing. And then at the end, we'll have some questions and conversation. So again, thanks for having me. So kind of the first question is, why have a white cane and what can that cane do for me? And first, before I really begin, just know that these talking points and some of the things I'm going to talk about is going to be really ultimately preference to you. And that's the really kind of like the beauty of travel and what independence really is that personal preference of these kind of things that we're going to talk about. Why have a cane? What is that going to do for you? What is that going to do for us when we have a cane? First and foremost, that's our identifier, right? That's what's going to tell people, hey, there's a blind person right here. It's going to allow them to, it's going to give you that space when you're out and about, but mainly that's the identification card that tells people, hey, there's someone that's blind and low vision, let's give them some space. Let's let them kind of figure some things out and And then also, so and so, it's going to give you just a sense of, like I mentioned the word independence. It's going to give you a sense of independence, some of that confidence and security that maybe you haven't felt that you have, you've never had before. For speaking to some of my experiences, being new to blindness back in 2017, my very first introduction to Okane was coming to the training center here and, you know, doing some training. I was an individual that was kind of using some of my residual vision. With my residual vision, I was, you know, kind of stepping off curbs, dodging some shadows. You could probably imagine I looked really, really awkward sometimes. And having that cane really gave me a sense of what was really going on around me. There were some times where I was just scared to step out of my front door, you know. That cane allowed me, once I had that cane in my hand, I was able to, you know, my world opened up. You know, I've heard many people say that, you know, a lot of travel instructors and other people, when they first got a cane, that just a brand new world just opened up right in front of me, right below my feet. I'm able to now walk to the curb, walk to the mailbox. I'm able to tell, you know, sometimes it's really hard to tell, but if you have some residual vision, some of those depths, you know, you might have some depth perception issues or, you know, things along those lines. So that cane is a great tool to check, you know, see how deep stairs are, how deep a curb line might be. But as I mentioned, it's just going to open up a brand new world to you.
Charles,
you know,
can I add something? Yep. This is Duncan. So I can't tell you how many times in all the years I've been teaching cane travel that I would talk with someone and I would suggest them getting and using a white cane, and they would say, oh, I'm not that dependent yet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's just the opposite of what a white cane can do for you. It will lead to complete independence for you. And so keep that in mind. If that's going through your head right now, try to open up your thought process and see that this might be something that will really help you be independent going forward. So thank you.
Thank you. Charles. Thank you, Duncan. Yep. And that's just one, a couple words that, you know, just kind of think about as we're presenting is think of independence and really think of confidence. Those are some really great words to really think about as we're presenting. How much independence can I have? Because, you know, if, you know, I really want you guys to remember independence looks different for all of us. Confidence is different than for all of us. And but having that cane is definitely going to help with that quite a bit. So we could talk about a couple different types of canes that you will most commonly see, most common that I have seen in my many years, and Duncan, feel free to jump in here.
Yeah.
Of course, we have the NFB straight white cane. It's a rigid cane. It is a fiberglass cane, super lightweight. It has a metal glide tip. And we're going to go into like all the benefits of all these different canes that we're going to talk about. And I mentioned, so it's a straight white cane, no brakes in it, really lightweight. It's really, really great for recognizing texture differences in your walking surfaces. Difference between a sidewalk and the street and things like that. Really great for recognizing elevation changes. Another type of cane that you might see is going to be what's called a folding cane. A folding cane is exactly like how it sounds. It's going to have different breaks throughout the shaft of the cane, and you're able to kind of fold it, easy for storage. Some of them are going to have metal different tips as well, and we'll get into the different tips that you'll see here in a second. There's a telescoping cane or a collapsing cane. It's exactly how that sounds. It kind of folds in on itself. Another really lightweight, great cane for storage and things like that. Another really common cane is going to be and it was called an Ambitech cane. This one tends to be a little shorter, and we'll get into sizing and how to size as well. This cane tends to be a little shorter. It could be a rigid cane, or it could be a folding cane as well. This cane tends to be a little heavier on the heavier side. So just, keep that in mind. There are different materials that canes come in. So like I said, you have your fiberglass, you'll have a carbon fiber, aluminum canes. Those tend to be a little louder. And another type of cane, believe it or not, is just going to be as a support cane. There's support canes that are white as well that will help you identify, help to identify you as a blind or low vision person as well. Duncan, is there anything that you want to add to that before we move on?
Yeah, so Charles talked about folding canes, and yes, mostly the folding canes have several different places in them to fold, but the NFB, and I apologize I didn't check on this, but I will check on it before tomorrow. The NFB used to sell, and maybe still does sell, a 50-50 cane that folds once. And I always felt that that was the best of the folding canes. The last that I knew about that particular cane was that it wasn't being made anymore, and that the NFB still had certain sizes of it. You couldn't get it in every single size, but that's the cane that my good friend Ray McGeorge used to use all the time. And one thing to remember about folding canes is that they are helpful and effective when you're not using them. So think about what is going to be the best for you while you are using it.
Mm-hmm.
People tend to forget that.
Yes. This is Judy.
Yeah.
Can I raise a thing that as everyone is listening to you, some of you are, most of you probably have some usable vision, and you're thinking, I'm listening to this, but it doesn't really apply to me. Do you want to talk about why somebody with some vision may still benefit from a cane before you go further?
I could definitely speak to that, and I'm in that boat. There are going to be some examples where, so when I'm teaching students, and we're a training center where we want to teach, non-visual skills. But with students that are, when we're working with clients that have some residual vision, we're not saying, hey, don't use your vision, but use these skills, use your cane, use these travel skills that we're teaching you with your residual vision. So that, and because you're building that confidence and those really good practices. And we'll get into cane basics here in a second. But there's going to be some instances, like for me, where dim lighting in restaurants or, the bar scenes and things like that, where the lighting is super, super dim, where my vision does not work. And if I don't maintain those good practices and if I don't have my cane, I'm walking in the tables. I'm hopefully not, I don't want to spill drinks on people. They're there to have a good time too. So we don't want to do that. But there's going to be some instances where your vision is just not going to be useful. Sunlight, right? If you're walking into the sun, definitely a real common one, right? Where you want to make sure you have a cane so you're able to tell that walking surface and make sure that you're recognizing what's happening around you, that spatial awareness all around you. So, Yes. So it's definitely really common to, to use a cane with your residual vision if you have that. Really good practice.
And let me just let everybody know that there's only a very small percentage of blind people who are completely blind.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So probably most people on this call have some remaining vision. However, think about that your vision probably isn't very reliable. Like Charles is talking about being in dim situations or going quickly from sunlight inside can be hard to use residual vision in any kind of reliable way. So we do advocate and want people to use a white cane along with residual vision. And then, you will be able to travel independently.
Absolutely. Really quick, I'll talk about it. We talked about a whole bunch of different canes. So we'll talk about the different tips and then we'll move on to cane travel basics really quickly. So with most of the NFB canes, you heard that I mentioned quite a bit. With these NFB canes, the tip that you're going to see mostly is going to be called a metal glide tip. Really, it's just a round metal tip. It's a little bit bigger than a quarter. It could be about the same size as a quarter. This is one of the better tips that we have found that will, recognizing texture differences, elevation changes, like if you're in a snowy climate, icy climate, really great tip to use to help you recognize, ice on that surface, things like that. With the Ambutech cane that I mentioned, most of those tips are going to be a little bit more heavier. You'll have marshmallow tip, and you'll have a roller ball. Those ones are a little bit more heavy. They roll over the surfaces. Sometimes if you have like neuropathy, these ones might be a little bit better for people, but sometimes, for other users, it might be harder for some people to recognize those different texture changes. So it's just preference. Once you start using the cane and practice the cane, you'll find the one that fits your lifestyle.
And can I just add that I think maybe some of you don't know that the National Federation of the Blind does give free white canes to
free
people.
White cane.
And so that particular cane that you would receive as a free white cane is also the kind of cane that we use at the Colorado Center for the Blind to teach students. And we choose this cane because we feel it is the very best cane that a person can use and gives you the most sound feedback and is lighter weight than many other canes. So if you need help figuring out how to, ask for a free white cane, let us know and we can work with you on that.
Mm-hmm. One thing I want to add too to that is that the NFB really wants to, along with the free white cane program that we have, the NFB also just wants blind people to have a cane in their hand. And so there's a link on there, and people can help out with that. It's called I think the link is called Sources of Canes, and it breaks down the different types of canes, who sells it, where to get it from, and things like that. So, that's what's so great about the NFB. They just want blind people to be confident, independent as much as they possibly can. So I love that they add that information as a resource there. Okay, let's get into some cane, how to size a cane, how to determine the right cane for me, and then we'll get into some cane basics. So typically, when you're determining the right cane, the right fit for yourself, all kind of things play a factor. How tall you are, your gait, your walking speed, things like that are going to play a really crucial role in choosing the right cane for you. When sizing a cane, usually the go-to is right around the tip of your nose, no lower than your sternum, really. And that's kind of how you determine the right fit. If you are a tall person, but you're a really fast walker and you have a really confident gait, you might even go to your forehead just because you want that extra length to help to just kind of help get that feedback ahead of you. You know, find those things that are blocking your walking path, things like that. So it really kind of depends on how tall you are, your walking speed, your gait. Those all kind of play a factor when choosing the right cane for yourself. As you know, kind of building up from the ground. So we really truly believe when we're working with our clients here at the center is that we want to build a foundation, a structure of skills that transition to every environment that you're going to go to. And so that structure is called, you know, the four components of really good cane technique. And as I mentioned, the very, very first one is getting a cane in your hand, getting it there, you know, and just having it, holding it for the very first time. What does it feel like? You know, that kind of thing. As you're building that up, there's a couple different grips depending on the environment that you're going to use, depending on what you're traveling through. So if it's a wide open space, it's going to be a open palm grip a standard open palm grip where your thumb pad is going to be kind of pointed up to the ceiling. You're going to have and some people, you know, play with this grip a little bit. Some people have their index finger kind of running along the shaft of the cane. I like to have a nice loose grip. All four, you know, my index finger, middle finger, ring finger, pinky are under the cane, and my thumb is folded over the cane. So that's kind of an open palm grip. And then if it's a real tight area, hallways, most like an indoor travel, going up and down stairs, exploring an object, things like that, you're going to kind of go what's called a pencil grip, where you're going to have a little bit more control of your cane, and it's just going to give you like kind of like that feedback, what's immediately in front of you. Does someone have something?
Well, I know Winford had his hand raised. Winford Haynes is an orientation and mobility instructor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And is joining us, and he will be doing the presentation on, I think it's Thursday. But go ahead, Winford, cool. If you've got a comment. Okay. Not hearing Winford.
Okay, I'll go ahead and continue on. If he jumps in, then I'll go ahead and stop.
And I do think we want to explain why we have the length of cane that we do.
So the length of cane that we choose and why that's important, it's really going to give you ultimate understanding of your environment. So having that long white cane, it's going to let you know as you're navigating. It's going to give you that feedback. Oh, you know, there's an obstacle. So if you have your cane open palm, your cane is kicked out in front of you, it's going to give you that extra 2.5-3 feet of space in front of you. If that cane hits something, it'll give you that reaction time. For you, you know, to kind of figure out, oh, what is happening? What do I need to do? So having that good length of cane is really good for having a good understanding of exploring those objects in your space all around you.
Yeah, and I always would look, when I was working with people, would look at, is there at least 3 steps reaction time before a person's foot gets to what they've found at their cane tip. Yep. And we found that 3 steps reaction time is pretty necessary. And so that's why we teach people with a longer cane than many other organizations do, just so you can continue to walk at a good clip if you want to, if you've always been a fast walker, and that you have the safety of the white cane. Okay.
So keep building up that core foundation of skills. So we have the cane in our hand. We talked about those 2 different grips that are most common that we're going to use. Now we have to get the cane positioned correctly. And when you're positioning cane, you want it center line. So your belly button. So the end of that cane handle is going to be right about your belly button. Don't put it on your belly button because, you know, in some cases that's going to hurt. but you want to right about that belly button line. And reason being is, so, and we'll get to this third step, which is your cane arc. So if your cane is centered, you're going to have a more even arc as opposed to if your cane is on, I call it the gunslinger type hold, where you're, if you're right-handed, your cane, you know, be more, you know, down by your right pocket, your cane is working that much harder to get to that left side. And so you're not going to have an even arc. Your body's not going to, when you're navigating, you're not going to feel as protected. One of the other crucial things is that when you're having, if you have the cane just to one side or and not centered, is that if you're, you might have more of a tendency to veer. So having that cane centered is going to help you walk in those straight lines a little more effectively. And then, like I mentioned, so, and then going into that right away, that third component is your cane arc. You want to make sure that cane arc is really even. So you want to go slightly just beyond your shoulders, the widest width of your body, shoulder to shoulder, nice, even cane arc. A really good thing to practice if you're not sure about your cane arc is just stand center in a door in a doorway and just arc your cane back and forth in a doorway. And that'll kind of help you, you know, with that width of that arc and to tell you if it's even on both sides or not, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fourth and final component of good cane technique is walking in step. Now, this is one that people tend to kind of overthink. And I always tell people, this will come with practice. The more you do it, the more it'll happen. So walking in step means if my cane tip is on my right, I'm taking a step with my left foot. So the really kind of like the visual thing is I'm visualizing kicking my cane back and forth. And what really the meaning for and why we do this is we want to clear that next step. We want to make sure that there's no debris on the ground. There's nothing blocking when we put our next step down. Duncan, is there anything that you want to add before we move?
I would just say that it is important to be in step. So swinging your cane to the right when you step with your left foot.
Yep.
Swing your cane to the left when you step with your right foot. If you do it faster than that, it really won't hurt anything except your hand and your wrist and your arm will get tired sooner than it needs to. If you do it less often, I know people who swing like once every two or three steps. Mm. Well, those people also run into things because they don't have enough reaction time to what is at the end of their cane. And so it's going to take a little practice for you to get it to be in step. I know that when I first learned cane travel, I had to practice multiple times to really get in step.
There you go, now you're unmuted.
But okay. Once you do, you won't have to think about it anymore, you know. And so you want to develop a really good cane technique so that as you go forward, you don't have to think so much about your cane technique and you can concentrate on other factors for independent travel.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And so these last few minutes, and Dungy kind of made me think of a point. So these last few minutes, as you thinking about the good cane technique, is not dispensing, you know, not putting out so much unnecessary energy. When learning how to use a cane for the first time, or just, you know, this is natural sometimes that we'll navigate an area where we feel a little anxious, unsure, and sometimes that, you know, you might find yourself gripping your cane really, really tight, you know, white knuckling your cane, gripping it really, really tight. Or you might be shuffling your feet a little more than you normally will, or, you know, your steps might be a little heavier. Just kind of keep those in mind, because when you're doing that, you're putting out way too much energy on top of what you're already doing. So it might just kind of wear you out a little bit more. So, you know, kind of keep that in mind as well.
Okay. I just got a message from Winford, who wanted to make a comment that he's not able to unmute himself. Can we unmute him or not? I don't know how to do that. So I'll just keep talking and maybe...
excuse me. This is Ellen, the Zoom organizer. I did send him a message to unmute himself.
Oh, okay. There you go, Winford. I guess you received a message about that. Mm-hmm. I will just say that I was the director of the senior department at the Colorado Center for the Blind. A lot of what we did on travel was what I would call constant contact.
Yes.
So Charles is talking about moving your cane back and forth in an arc. Well, for mostly what I taught was keep your cane on the ground through that, so that you would find everything you would come to, even if it's a small rock or something. Some people like to teach that you tap on the left and tap on the right. If you decide to do that, you want to keep your arc really, really low, because otherwise it's too difficult to determine when you've come up to a curb. I learned that the hard way. When I was first on travel, I was tapping because that's the way I was taught. And that was many years ago. But I had a high arc and I stepped off of every single curb I came to until my instructor told me, get your arc lower. So,
when you're using that constant contact, as Duncan mentioned, that's the one that's going to help you recognize all those texture differences and what's on that walking surface.
Right.
And the other one that Duncan was speaking to, the two-point touch, where you're tapping your cane on each side of your body, you know, if that's something that you want to practice as well, is you kind of just visualize like the height of the sole of your shoe, and you don't want to go too much higher lifting the cane up than that, because really then you're just kind of, again, you're putting out a lot of energy, but then the reaction time is really not going to be there when you're around like certain elevations, curb lines and stairs and things like that.
Okay, thank you. Winford, I think you're unmuted now. Do you have a comment for us? Oh, now he's... Winford, do you have a comment?
Can you guys hear me?
Oh, yeah, now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now you can hear me. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, just several comments I was wanting to make, but with the two-point touch, one of the things that I explained to my... If I may have missed it because I was trying to get someone to help me unmute, but some of the things that I do is... When I work with students, I explain to them to tap their cane at around 2 o'clock and 10 o'clock. That's to get wide enough that it covers outside of their elbows. And also, like Charles was saying, you know, not the gunsling, but have it in the center. The things I talk to the students about is constant contact is a good technique. Just make sure you have a lot of extra tips, because it's going to wear your tip out. And then a few things I was saying, I'm going to say, is like when we're talking about the different canes, a lot of times with the folding canes, with the straight cane, when you hit something, the information is immediately in your hand. With the folding cane, travels up, but it kind of ripples up the joints, and same with the collapsible, but also with the collapsible, you've got to travel with very finesse. Otherwise, it'll keep collapsing on you. So,
Those are great points. Thank you for mentioning that. I know we want to save some time for questions. Maybe some examples that when to use a folding cane would be a really good example would be maybe on an airplane. When we store, the straight white cane, and you need to run to the restroom, and you're maybe in an aisle seat, and your cane's by the window, and you don't want to, bother the row. You just take out your folding cane from your backpack purse and things like that, and unfold it and go use the restroom, or some people will same kind of instance in a restaurant. Maybe you have your straight white cane. You want to go get up and take a break from the table or something like that, you could just take out your folding cane. So it's really convenient, but there are some cons as was mentioned to that. Mm-hmm. The feedback is gonna be a little bit different, but it's always good if you're traveling a lot, it's always good to have a backup cane. So folding canes and collapsing canes are really great, just emergency canes as well. So if you're out and maybe you get into an Uber or something coming back home from the store, whatever the case is, and sometimes your cane gets caught in the door and it snaps. So, well, that's okay. I got my backup cane. I'll have to at home order a cane, but I'm ready. I'm prepared. I have my backup cane with me, my folding cane ready to go.
Okay.
And that's it.
So I think we could open this up to questions.
Yeah.
People can unmute themselves and say their name or raise their hand.
This is Brian.
Brian? Yeah, Brian.
Am I clear to proceed?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, the question I have, I've been a cane user myself for many, many years, and I know exactly what you're talking about partial. I was diagnosed as legally blind back in 94. But I was a highly partial. I can pass a driving test, while they didn't give me the peripheral test. My eyesight had degenerated. I am now completely, totally blind. The only thing I have is just light perception between light and dark. The question I have is on the tips, that the NFB type had the metal tips,
mm-hmm.
and the other type, that is the Teflon, the shaped like a mushroom. Mm-hmm. My question is, how strong are those metal tips? The reason why I ask that question, when I go walk around my neighborhood, I have an older neighborhood. There's no sidewalk, but there's a gutter and a street. Uh-huh. And those gutters have gaps in there, good 2 or 3 inches. So I'm walking along, and I use the cane I use as a Teflon tip. Bam, smacks right into it. Or I go by a car, and all of a sudden get caught in the tire, things like that. I have a snap one. Well, my only concern is how strong are those metal tips in a situation like that? I understand they're very good for feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm wondering, how strong are they?
To be completely honest with you, those the rollerball tips are a little bit more durable than the metal tips. The metal tips are, and Duncan might be able to explain this, are specific to user, one person versus another person in their environment are going to go through metal tips a little different than someone else would. All depends on, how much traveling you're doing, the area you're traveling through. It will, however, the metal tip will recognize those cracks and things that you were just mentioning. It all depends on how much pressure you're applying to the cane, whether it, you allow it to jump out of that crack. So it kind of like all those things kind of like play a little bit of a factor.
So I think that the metal tips are durable and
mm-hmm.
they do wear out. So both of those things. But we are not talking about you traveling for a week and having to change your tip.
Absolutely.
It's going to go a lot longer than that. Yeah. And the metal tips are not very expensive. And we've talked about the information you get through your cane tactile information. Well, there's also wonderful auditory information you get from a metal tip that you would not get from another tip.
That's true.
So, you know, I guess for you, I would just recommend that you try it. You can get a free cane from us at the NFB and give it a try. And maybe, you know, order an extra tip or something. But
how hard are they to replace?
So they, they pop on and off. You know, you just kind of have to angle it. It has a, so it's metal on the bottom. It's a metal ring on the bottom. And then on the top, it's rubber. So kind of just you kind of, you know, wiggle it off. And then to kind of put it right back on, you just kind of from an angle, you just apply some pressure and work it on. And then once you get the tip on there, you turn it right back over and just give it a nice tap on the ground to make sure it's nice and secure.
Now, one problem you might have if you're walking and you're kind of fast and you really catch it under the tire, when you're trying to pull it out, you may pull it off of the cane. That might be one problem, but other than that, they are really pretty durable.
Mm-hmm. What I tell people with that is, don't ever pull if you're using an NFB cane with the metal tip, don't pull it from the shaft or the handle. Slide your hand down that cane to where it's where it's stuck at, and work it out from the bottom from the tip. So that way you're not gonna pull that tip off.
That's good advice. Yeah.
Okay. You see, Alfred has her hand up.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay, here I am, right?
Yes.
Okay. I recently went to my cane. I have both kinds. And what I found so helpful was on steps. Oh my God, I went to a wedding and there was a whole bunch of steps that I absolutely needed that cane for the depth perception of when I should. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to know if you would address the thing of using it on steps.
Yeah, absolutely. So, with steps, you're going to use that pencil grip. And
right, okay.
And so you're going to have that cane in front of you. And what I tell people, and I'll go over that technique really, really quick. So when using a cane, it might be good practice to, you know, obviously in most situations, you're going to have your cane in your dominant hand. Mm-hmm. With steps, it's going to be a little different, right? So you might have that handrail in your dominant hand, and you want to be comfortable using your cane and your other hand, and using the rail and the cane simultaneously. So the technique is, you're going to have that cane the next step ahead of you, and you're going to sweep those stairs as you're moving up. So usually kind of breaking it down a little further, I don't want to overcomplicate it. The cane is, if the handrail is in your right hand and the cane's in your left hand, it's going to be on the next step ahead of you. It's going to be closer to your left foot. As you're stepping up with your left foot, you're sweeping to the right. And then as you're moving up, you're moving that cane up to the next step, sweeping it back to the left and stepping up to that next step with your right foot. Does that make sense?
Yes, but I also used it auditory, because I would tap the bottom of the step and then go up and tap the top of the step. And then so I really used every sense I had.
Yeah, that cane is a great tool to check the depth of steps and curves. You could just kind of put it down there and just kind of see how deep those steps are butted up to the front of that. Then just slide that cane when you're checking the depth, just slide that cane tip up the front of that step and the curb, and it'll give you an idea of just how deep it is.
And is it true that it's easier to go up steps than down? Down is very, it's harder, I think.
You know, I think sometimes people have some fear around going down. So when I worked with people, I usually, we worked on going up first a couple times and then going down. The other thing I want you to remember, we've talked about the pencil grip, and I'm going to explain it a little bit more. So you're going to hold your cane as if you were writing with the tip of it. So hold it like a pencil. And you're not, probably when you're going up and downstairs, you're not going to be holding it on the handle. You can hold your cane with the pencil grip anywhere along the cane shaft.
Okay.
So it can be way below the handle if that's what needs to occur. Yeah. Yeah.
You might have like a 90 degree or a little bit more bend in your arm when you're holding it in pencil grip.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
William
has his hand up.
Okay. And Jennifer Uchinow has her hand up.
Yeah. I see that too. So I'm going to call on William first and then Jennifer.
Hi.
Hi.
So a question I have, and I think I've heard the answer from other mobility trainers, but in hockey, they call it spearing. When you're using the cane with constant contact and you hit that crack in the sidewalk, there's a tendency for me to get jabbed in the stomach frequently. Mm-hmm. What is the best way to avoid that? And then my other question would be, what is the best way to clean your cane?
Oh, okay. Yeah. What I kind of teach people, so there's a couple of things that might be happening. So if the cane is getting stuck constantly in those cracks, you might be applying too much pressure to your cane. And when I was talking about that cane positioning and positioning at center line, you want it a little bit off of your body. And so that's kind of, and then that meaty part of your palm, that back of your palm, is going to be kind of protecting your body if your cane comes back at you. Another good tip is to use your thumb, like that thumb pad, as a counterweight. So if it gets stuck, you can kind of press down on the back handle of your cane. If you're able to do that, you have the dexterity to do that, and use that as a counterweight to lift that tip up just a little bit to get over those cracks.
And the cleaning of the cane?
Oh, cleaning of the cane.
Both handle and bottom, I guess, really.
Yep, handle, bottom. Some people will have wet wipes with them all the time, in the bag or something like that for going to public restrooms. Or just soap and water.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Jennifer.
Yes, hi. My question is, if there is zero handrail and the width of the steps changes, what do you do to navigate safely?
First and foremost, you do not want to use your cane as a support cane, just because, especially if it's an NFB cane, they're a little bit more flexible, so they're not as durable to use as a support cane. I would first just kind of check the depth of those stairs, and you're right, yes, some stairs are wider and narrow as they'll open up and stuff like that, but keeping that arc still consistent in front of your body, if the stairs open up, you don't have to exaggerate your arc. You just have to worry about what is in front of you, like what's in front of your feet. So keeping that arc just a little bit beyond shoulder to shoulders as you're sweeping the stairs. A good practice would be taking just one step at a time. Just stepping up, and then, you don't have to alternate the steps, just come up and then meet that step with your other foot, and just going really slow and just taking it one step at a time if there's not a handrail. But I think that if you can, you don't want to use that cane as kind of like a support, just because it's just really, it's not built for something like that.
This is Judy.
Yeah, Judy.
I want to add something. You may not have that choice, but I think it's perfectly okay. You should always have the cane with you. But if someone else is with you, there's nothing wrong with saying, when we go up these stairs, may I just take your arm?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And it's especially for stairs like that.
I think you also said that if the stairs are because sometimes you go down and they're a little bit different widths. One will be kind of a normal step, if you will, and the next one will be a little bit wider.
Oh, longer, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So sometimes also what you can do with going down is you can check where where to step off and make sure that you know where the edge of it is. And you can, sometimes what we'll do is have them step down one step and goes kind of sideways a little bit so that you're you're using your, say, stronger leg to lower yourself going down before that way you can use that technique.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes. And I know Judith, I think Judith had, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I had to type it in. I don't know how to use that thing.
Okay.
I guess there's, when you first started this presentation, you were talking about the benefit of using a cane is so that you identify yourself as being blind. And I guess I just have a really hard time with that because I've always been the kind of person that likes to blend in and observe. And I don't feel comfortable being the center of attention. Especially, I mean, I think, especially, I think that just makes, would make me feel very vulnerable, not knowing who's watching me. And yeah, it, to me, it just makes me feel more vulnerable to someone taking advantage of me, that sort of thing. I have noticed that I think people think I can see more than I can. And then I have to let them know I'm visually impaired at this point. They sort of figure it out when they're trying to show me something and I can't really see it. But yeah, I mean, I just wanted to put that out there that that would make me feel very vulnerable as opposed to independent.
That you bring up a really good point. But I think and you also touched on being able to, so if you were in a crowded room and there's multiple people around you, I think that having that cane also kind of helps with those uncomfortable conversations. Maybe you stepped on somebody's foot or things like that. I think that it helps with that. But I mean, there is, you're absolutely right. There is a other part, being comfortable with identifying as a blind or and low vision person. And people are still working to that. The pros for me personally, I think for, you know, as you start to become more comfortable, you'll start to see that they outweigh just a little bit more, being able to not having to explain your blindness as much. And I don't know, Duncan, if you have anything else you want to add to that.
Yeah. So I think that getting a cane is possibly, well, let me backtrack. For many of you, giving up driving may have been just one of the most difficult things you ever had to do. And next to that is getting a white cane can be very difficult. There's a lot of emotion around it. There's, you know, are people going to be watching you? That sort of thing that Judith was talking about. I think you have to look at your life and decide what you want. Are you, and I'm not saying just you, Judith, but everybody here, are you giving up doing a lot of things because you're not able to see well enough to go there? Have you given up places at night because of your vision loss? You know, you just, I think, have to make those decisions. And for a lot of people, it's not a quick thing. For a lot of people, it is a process of coming to acceptance that that is something that they need to do. So, yeah, if anybody has anything else to add to that.
Yes, this is Winford. So, one of the things that we talk to our students about, that's one of the most common senses that they get, is feeling vulnerable. But as you're walking with the low vision, your head's down, you're not walking as confident if you don't, if your vision, if you have low vision, you're going to walk more confident once you start using the cane, and you're going to look less vulnerable walking with your head up than with your head down, and look walking as if you're unsure of where things are or where you're going. Those are some of the things that we kind of promote with our students that, you know, that helps.
One other thing I wanted to touch on really quick. This is a really great question. So I think that taking steps to accepting that is really, really important in some cases. Mm-hmm. So it might be, you know, we talked earlier about maybe grabbing someone's shoulder or elbow when going up and down stairs. Maybe a good practice for you might be, you know, if you're going out with people, saying, okay, you know, if we're going out today, I'm going to have my cane. I'm going to just introduce it as I'm doing things with my friends and family. And I think by doing that and introducing those steps, you might start to see yourself slowly becoming more comfortable with having the cane and developing those techniques with your cane.
One other thing, this is Judy.
This is Brian.
Hang on a second, Judy, go ahead.
We're about to run out of time. I would remind everyone that during our chat hour, an hour from now, we can bring all of this up again.
Yeah, and we do have a session tomorrow. We're going to be talking about using other canes or other techniques along with a long white cane, such as support cane and so on. So we can certainly talk about some of these issues there as well.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Charles. I really
appreciate
your presentation, and I appreciate you volunteering your time to do this.
Oh, absolutely. It's been great. Thank you again. Second year doing this. I really love it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for spending your time with us today. We appreciate your participation. For more information, contact President Glenn Crosby at nfbseniors@gmail.com. or call 443-681-9345. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.